Oslo, the capital of Norway, is one of the fastest changing and I would say most improved cities in Europe. Its sprawling harborfront, until recently a fjordside industrial wasteland, is totally revisioned and it's become a vibrant, people-friendly residential neighborhood and a delight for visitors as well. Curtis Rojak is an American who's adopted Oslo as his hometown. He left America 25 years ago and he's settled into Norway and now he runs a bike tour company there. I had such fun biking around town with Curtis as I updated my Scandinavia guidebook on my last visit. I thought, I've got to get Curtis on Travel with Rick Steves to share his enthusiasm for his adopted hometown. So now Curtis joins us to get us up to date on this thriving Scandinavian capital. Curtis, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Good to see you again.
Yeah, you know, for me, my family comes from Norway, and to visit with you in Oslo and that you went the other direction 25 years ago. Before we get into Oslo, tell us just about your story. How'd you end up in Oslo?
I think like a lot of Americans had a travel bug that I wanted to itch in Europe. And so I first came to Europe in high school and was definitely bitten by the travel bug. And soon after that, I was here. That was in 1998, and I haven't looked back. Been living in Europe for the most part since 1998. Travels have taken me to a lot of countries, and along the way, I met a Norwegian girl, and that is now my wife, and we've got three kids. And so I am what we often refer to here in Norway as a love refugee.
I can understand. A love refugee in Norway. And how old are your kids?
They're 5, 8, and 10, so it keeps me busy.
So just in general, what were the big adjustments for you when you raising a family in Norway? How is that for an American? Is it an adjustment?
The biggest adjustment is a positive one. It is just such a family-focused society where the employers make sure that people are out the door at 3:30 in the summer, 4:30 in the winter. They kind of push you out to go home with your family. The kids have what I would consider pretty stress-free days at school with no grades until you're done with middle school. There are a lot of facets that are about making day-to-day life with kids, both for the kids and the parents, relatively stress-free compared to, I think, what a lot of other countries deal with. So that was a real positive adjustment, is just to kind of slow down, take it a bit easier, expect more time with the family.
Americans also have an image of Scandinavians as kind of miserable socialists, paying high taxes and having no choice and all this kind of thing. You've lived both lives. Norwegians clearly choose their style of government. In a nutshell, how is that working?
I think they chose in the past. And now, just like anywhere, the system is embedded in your daily life. So people almost don't think about it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we take for granted here, given, is that you pay your taxes and in return, you get equivalent services. Mm-hmm. So you get the really affordable daycares. You know, we're talking 1/7, 1/8 the price of the US, and it's universal. Every child has access as guaranteed daycare. Yeah. You get the paid maternity and paternity leave, which is 1 year at full salary. You have all of these benefits that come out of you paying the taxes. So you don't think too much about it. It's just it's become the norm, let's say, and maybe we have to thank previous generations for having created such a good social system that now, taking it for granted, I'm not sure if that's the right way. That has a very negative connotation, but you don't think about it. It's just that's the way things work, and they work well.
By the way, I'm talking with Curtis Rojak, and he leads bike tours in Oslo for his cleverly named company, Viking Biking. Curtis is joining us today to get us up to date on the rapidly changing cityscape of Norway's capital city, Oslo. And you can learn more about Curtis's work at his website, vikingbikingoslo.com. Curtis, you took me biking all along Oslo's harborfront. Describe the change in the harborfront of Oslo in the last couple of decades.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I can remember the first time I was on that harborfront, and it was 21 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was winter. It was bleak. There were very few people milling about. There was one stretch, which is known as Akerbrygga, which had been redeveloped, and the rest of the harbor was bleak and industrial, and no one dared to go there, and there was lots of cars and traffic and a container port. So that was my introduction to Oslo. And I get such a great pride out of seeing people's reactions now when they come on our tours to see Oslo through their eyes for the first time. Mm-hmm. And realize just how much the city has grown and how much better it's gotten. It's like seeing Christmas through your children's eyes in a way. You get to see people lighting up going, oh, this opera house is amazing. This, car-free downtown is amazing. You have all of this wonderful feedback. And I do think back often to that first impression I had more than two decades ago and how much it has improved. And it fills not just me with pride, but I will say the people of Oslo, we really do feel it here. There is a great pride in that part of the city.
Didn't they drill tunnels under the city? So if you're going from east to west, you don't even show your face in the city. You go under it. And if you go into the town, you got to pay an extra fee.
Yeah, there's tunnels everywhere. It's not just Oslo. I should say that Norway is the land of tunnels, two of the three longest road tunnels in the world. We have roundabouts in our tunnels. We have rest areas in some of our tunnels that are so long around Norway. So Oslo, I think, took inspiration from this amazing network of tunnels that we've been building for the past 100 years and said, hey, if we can drill tunnels through mountains in the countryside, why couldn't we just do the same thing in the city? And so in the 1980s and 90s, they began the tunnel experiment. And it works so great that now, you know, we're like gophers. We just keep digging and digging and digging in the tunnels. Yeah. The tunnel network just keeps expanding.
You know, when we were biking through what was this industrial wasteland, now it is clearly a residential area. It's people friendly. And there must have been a vision here. And you did a great job of describing it as we rolled through. But I'm thinking many American cities are sort of, they're becoming scary at night when there's nobody working there. And it's kind of desolate. It feels dangerous. But you don't have that feeling in Oslo because I think they value having that vibrancy that comes with people living upstairs above the business ground floor.
Absolutely. And making it so that the people who live there, if they want to get around, they don't jump in their car. You want to have boots on the ground. You need people biking. You need people walking. Even in the winter, it's not like Montreal or Minneapolis where they put the people underground or in tunnels. The cars are there. So the people are above ground. And, you know, we've got the Viking blood here. We're not afraid in the winter to walk around. We're not afraid in the rain to walk around. We're not afraid in the summer heat. You just see people at all times of day and all types of the year and all types of weather enjoying that harborfront promenade.
What did we find? Just paint the picture here, Curtis, because I remember just past the Munch Museum, we went inland a couple blocks, and it was all new. It was all condos. It was all yacht club kind of restaurants on the ground floor. There was little parking lots for your kayak. There were floating saunas. There were playgrounds. I mean, paint the picture as if you're a realtor trying to sell me a condo. What do you have here?
I think what sums up the Oslo Harborfront more than anything is these floating saunas. It's the connection to using the water year-round. It started with just a group of ice bathers 20 years ago or so who were swimming from what was a container port. You know how industrial it was. And as the port got cleaned up, they went from ice bathers to building their first floating sauna to building a sauna village to now there are multiple sauna villages. Some of the saunas have motors on them and you can rent them and boat around in the inner harbor on a sauna, if you can imagine that. And the high season is actually fall, winter, and spring when the water is cold. Shows you the real Viking roots, and that also shows you how lively it is year-round and that these saunas are used 12 months a year. The water has been cleaned up so everyone can swim, and it's become like a social meeting point. It's one of those few places in Oslo where you can just randomly talk to a stranger.
Yes, I felt that. It was a little community. It was sort of a vacation zone for locals, just for R&R.
Exactly. And community not in the exclusive way, like you have to be part of it and that will talk to you. No, community in that it's like embracing of anyone who wants to give it a shot. If you're a tourist and you're there, whether it is freezing cold in December or warm and sunny in the summer, just grab your swim trunks. You can just walk up. It's very affordable, too. I think most of these are about like $20 or something for a few hours. And
so you book your time, or you can just show up if there is a place. But you've got sunbathing areas. You've got ladder that goes into the water. You can jump into the fjord. Of course, you got your saunas. You got a little drink bar. And you got a warm welcome.
Absolutely. And you really feel like a local. It's a way in to kind of get a picture of what Norwegians value and the people who live in those areas value, which is this, even though you're in the heart of the downtown, you have that connection to nature. And that harbor promenade has completely given the fjord back to the people. And we have that contact with the water once again, that was gone for decades.
You didn't have the contact with the water before. You turned your back on the water almost. And now you've got the opera house facing the water. You've got the incredible Dyckman public library facing the water. You've got the new National Museum right there. Let's talk about that bike tour that you and I went on together, Curtis. What was striking to me is there were old 1960s era industrial containers that were turned into information posts. There must have been 12 or 14 of these along a many mile long promenade for walking or for biking. Each one had a photograph of what it was like in the 60s and then what it's like today, and kind of gave you a little guided tour. And there's maps, and you bike from these info post to info post right by all this new development and this new vibrancy in Oslo.
Yeah, it's only about 5 years old, or so, let's say. They're calling it the Fjord City, or a Fjord Bien. And this was a way to try to get people in contact with the entire promenade, not to think, oh, it's just this row of restaurants. Actually, there's a wonderful redevelopment going on from one end to the other. And as you said, you can cover 13 or 14 of these containers. They're fun, too. The history is, you know, not just your standard, the king was here at this date. They have cartoon drawings. They show you maybe what it was like fishing in the 1800s. They show you the traffic in the 1960s. Yeah. And they also will tell you what's coming next. So it gives you a little window into what's next.
Curtis Rojak's our guest from Oslo, Norway, right now on Travel with Rick Steves, with recommendations for enjoying the freshly renovated harborfront amenities of the Norwegian capital. Curtis is a dual national of Norway and the U.S. and runs a bike rental and walking tour company called Viking Biking. Their website is vikingbikingoslo.com and includes blog posts and photos from Curtis and his team. Okay, Curtis, I'd like to redo a little bit of that biking tour that I enjoyed so much with you. And we'll just pretend we're doing this together. We're biking around underneath the medieval fortress, and I see a statue of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in Norway.
Yeah, pretty surprising, especially for American tourists. But the U.S., of course, during World War II, played an active role in supporting Norway. And so the Queen and the kids of the royal family actually were sponsored to go over to the United States as refugees. And so we've put that statue up as a thanks and a memorial to the U.S. who provided help.
And then we come to an old warehouse, and it's been turned into a food court called Vipa. And we went there for a wonderful lunch. What's inside?
Yeah, so on the outside, you see it, and it looks like just an old warehouse covered in street art, and you might be a bit skeptical. But actually, inside is one of the coolest vibes of Oslo, full of different vendors, whether you want Polish pierogies, fresh sushi, typical Norwegian food, great drinks that are just Scandinavian for the most part, and one of the best views of the fjord, with always sun on the wall, it feels like.
And it was more tasty than ever for me because of the strength of the dollar. What is there, 11 crowns in a dollar now? It's half the price I expect it to be. I mean, Oslo used to be brutally expensive, and now I think it's no more expensive than France or Germany.
Absolutely. We feel it when we're traveling out of Norway. All of a sudden, the U.S. feels like an expensive destination to us. So for Americans coming here, yeah, you can eat and drink and not worry about it too much.
Okay, we round the corner and we come to a funky little fishmonger's shack where they're evangelical about giving you tastes of fish fresh off the boat.
Yeah. They are a family-run business that's been going for generations and is just a kind of a pursuit of passion. And it's not just fish. They also will sell you your reindeer, your elk, all of the unusual wild game meats that we still really do eat here, especially at nice festivities like a Christmas or a wedding.
I felt guilty. He was just stuffing me with smoked salmon and shrimp. It's a good way of doing business, man. I went back the next day. Then we come to this amazing opera house, which is, it's like a landmark piece of architecture.
Yeah, when it opened in 2008, done by a local Oslo architecture firm, it did win Best New Building in the World. So yeah, it's not just you and I who think it's a beautiful thing. It is the pride of modern Oslo.
I parked the bike, you hung outside, and I went inside and I took a little tour and was very impressed by the interior architecture. And also, it's a sloping public piazza on the rooftop, and you can have events on the rooftop as well.
Yeah, we actually, in the summer, there's a lot of concert series where the stage and the artists are floating on a stage in the fjord, and all of the people watching are sitting on the opera, using it as like a grandstand.
And then we come to kind of like a Norwegian Woodstock. It's a concert venue, a sauna venue. What's the nickname? A nomadic art project, Salt.
Yes,
Art
Salt.
And Music.
Inspired by Northern Norway, so it has that traditional architecture of where they would dry the cod. That's why it's the A-frames that you would dry the cod on in Northern Norway. And they've turned it into one of the largest public saunas in Europe, as well as they have debates inside the saunas. They have concerts in the saunas. They have food trucks around. It is one of the most emblematic places along the Oslo Harbor.
And we're doing this whole tour taking advantage of a bike loaner program in Oslo. And you walked me through this. And I'm pretty technophobic when it comes to a lot of these ways to pop in your credit card and get access to something around town like you're a local. But this works easy for a tourist. It costs 10 bucks, 100 crowns for 3 days. And then as long as we parked our bike and took another one every hour, it was free. It's designed for short little hops, right? But we could do this whole trip for one of these free loaner bikes.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are stations everywhere. Once you open the app, you can see a station, you know, just every couple hundred of yards, 100 meters. So it's really easy to find a place to pick up a bike or a place to return it. And so if you're going past like a Salt, for example, and you want to stop and eat something there and check out the sauna, there is one of these City Bike Share parkings right there.
And then the finale for me was coming back to the center, and there's a new bench in front of the Nobel Peace Prize Center. Of course, the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded in Oslo. The bench is shaped like a smile, and there's a quote from Nelson Mandela in front of it. Tell us about that peace bench.
I think you should know also that that whole area was probably the most industrial area of Oslo. And so that the building where the Nobel Peace Prize Center is the old train station. And so for that to turn into a meeting point to talk about peace is almost emblematic. Like, we took an area that no one wanted to go to and turned it into a meeting point of peace. And so they just put this bench in front of there, and it's supposed to bring people together. You know, people sit on it. You see people always taking pictures, and it does exactly that. It really does invite conversation, people to be together before they've gone in to see the exhibit or after they've come out, kind of to be inspired by where they are, but also just a way for humanity, all these different nations visiting Oslo, to come together in the spirit of the Nobel Peace Prize.
You cannot sit on that bench without coming together because, as I mentioned, it's shaped like a
smile. Curved.
It's curved. You have to sit together. And I love that quote from Mandela. If I can remember correctly, it's the most powerful weapon is talking with each other.
And that's what that bench is. It's an invitation to chatting.
And it just feels like the whole waterfront is the same way.
Yeah, that is right next to the stop number 6 on that harborfront promenade that we were talking about, if people are interested in it. So there you go.
So there you go. Hey, Curtis Rojak, thank you so much for joining us. Best wishes as you lead people around Oslo on your bike tours. And I'll hope to see you on two wheels next time I'm back in Oslo.
Thank you very much, Rick.
We keep hearing reports of how crowded all the famous tourist sites are these days as people make up for lost travel time over the last few years. We'll hear what listeners have to report about how they deal with that next on Travel with Rick Steves. We're at 877-333-7425. And by email, it's radio@ricksteves.com.